Welcome to East Meets West number 174. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger Chang.
And I am live in New York City, while Roger is live in San Francisco, California.
We are literally on both ends of the coast.
We are literally east and west for the first time ever.
And not just across the bay.
We are and thanks to the Twit network, we can actually pull this off.
Yes, it's pretty awesome. That.
Wasn't going to be able to happen. Now, that also explains the insane lag between me saying something and Roger saying something, because I'm on crappy hotel bandwidth. The Westin hotels are very nice, but the bandwidth, not so much. So I'm actually using a Verizon MiFi for my bandwidth, and it's okay. It's what you'd expect from an EVDO connection.
You know, I'm not going to touch the camera. Everyone says I'm slightly unfocused. Last time I ever touched it right before the show. Any case, Tom.
I think you're just, they're just talking about your personality.
Might be. I could be actually just in a temporal warp, and I'm slightly shifted out of our space-time continuum.
You're shifting, right?
Interesting.
So you were us.
I noticed that you tweeted out that you actually had nachos for breakfast one day.
Yes, I was over in Park Slope, which is a neighborhood in Brooklyn. We were having a brunch at a place that my friend Chris had recommended. And on the menu was breakfast nachos, which was essentially tortilla chips, just like you'd expect, with some sour cream, some salsa, mushrooms, and cheese. So nachos, by any other name, with a couple of fried eggs thrown on top.
You know, it's very interesting because you can usually tell what part of the country you're in by what you're eating for breakfast. Typically, because, you know, say if I had huevos rancheros, I'd either be either in California or somewhere in the Southwest. If I had scrapple or something, I'm assuming I'd be up in the Northeast. At grits, right. I'd be in the South. I don't know about pancakes because pancakes and waffles are pretty generic. I mean, what would the Midwest equivalent be? Pancakes, right?
Yeah, your Midwestern breakfasts are pretty much eggs, bacon, sausage, maybe some pancakes, something like that. Yeah.
It's interesting that nachos was considered significant enough in the culinary scale of things that it could qualify as a breakfast food.
Well, is it that we've gotten to the point where all you have to do to make something breakfast is throw an egg in it? Because that's really what this was. It was a decent set of nachos. But I ate the fried egg first and then ate the nachos. It wasn't really all together, you know? I mean, it was weird. And you look around at breakfast places and whatever makes a breakfast, it's pretty much got eggs. Unless it's pancakes or waffles or maybe grits. A lot of times
bacon.
Grits for breakfast, yeah.
Because you normally don't get bacon. I take that back. Bacon burgers.
Christian points out biscuits and gravy in the chat room. That's also not any kind of... I guess that's sausage in the gravy a lot of times, but not always. But what makes breakfast breakfast?
I don't know. It seems like, the common or the conventional wisdom is that since breakfast is the first meal of the day, you should actually have a bigger breakfast than you would a dinner. In fact, swapping the two. When you have a... You know, I used to laugh at my chemistry teacher because he used to say, yeah, I had steak and eggs for breakfast, which was kind of the, that's the heart attack special. And that's kind of like, really egregious use of protein in the morning. But now that I think about it.
That's what we always do, right? We always do a bunch of protein with sausage and bacon and eggs. And, there's some carbs too with biscuits and pancakes, but mostly the focus when you have a breakfast food is on protein. Now, we're talking about American breakfast here. European breakfast is pretty similar, though, I think.
I think the English would be kind of similar, except they would have fried eggs. What do they have that we don't? Beans. Don't they have beans in their breakfast?
Yeah, they put some baked beans there. They grill a Roma tomato a lot of times. And especially in Ireland, they'll do blood pudding, which is, which is almost a sausage type of thing anyway.
Huh. Well, it's interesting because typically in my diet, it's a bowl of cereal if I do eat breakfast. But like traditionally, when I used to eat a Chinese
breakfast. That's what I grew up.
Chinese breakfast would be basically rice porridge and whatever leftover meat and vegetables from last night's dinner, like you scooped in.
I was going to say that makes sense to have the stuff from last night. Like, actually, my wife does every so often fried rice for breakfast, which is kind of the idea is that you take the rice leftover that you made the night before and you fry it up. Maybe throw in some egg or something, but you don't necessarily have to. In fact, she usually doesn't.
Yeah, and it's you know, I don't know. It's weird. You know, considering all the foods that we have on hand, like most people generally skimp on the breakfast. They get one of those weird yogurt shake deals, or they get one of those granola, granola mixed with fruit and like just plain yogurt on the bottom and you mix it up. Just doesn't seem very satisfying. I've eaten one before, and actually I've eaten a lot of those, but I'm always hungry by the time lunch rolls around.
What's with the stupid continental breakfast, which basically means we cheaped out and bought you a pastry.
A Danish. It's just one of those Fenhard ones that you get at Safeway. I don't know, but one place I do recommend if you ever get the chance to stay there for a good, you know, relatively priced, a reasonably priced hotel room with good breakfast is the NBC Suites. Because they offer basically omelets of anything you want in it. You just tell them, they start making the omelets. They already have this huge batch of eggs whipped up. So you tell them, oh, okay, I want sausage, I want bacon, I want cheese, I want spinach, I want tomatoes, and they just start throwing the stuff in. And then when you're done, you get like a 4-egg omelet served on a plate with a side of hash browns. That's really the way to do a breakfast at a hotel.
That sounds really good. My theory here was we're going through all these different breakfasts, and I wish we had like a wider variety of like what makes a breakfast in different parts of the world, because I know it's different. But it seems like the focus is on either carb loading, like your continental breakfast, your cereals, you know, just like give me a juice of energy going into the day, orange juice actually also, or it's protein, or it's very much eggs, bacon, sausage. So is it because, you know, we have a tradition of dating back to the farm times of, oh, I need a lot of protein in my system so that I can get out in the fields and, you know, have something that sustains me through the day? It's because the phrase is stick to my ribs breakfast. I don't want a breakfast that's just going to leave me, you know, feeling flagged fast, which a carbohydrate-based breakfast would. You need some meat in there, some kind of protein to really sustain the energy.
And it's interesting, you know, Stephen Fry, the British comedian. So he did a series called Stephen Fry in America, where he basically traveled from the East to the West Coast in one of those black London taxi cabs. And he actually stopped somewhere, I think it was Wisconsin or North Dakota, and he was talking to one of the locals at a diner and talking about the food that they were eating for breakfast. It was very heavy. It was like a lot of sausage, a lot of eggs, hash browns, pancakes and stuff. And he said, like, you know, back when that region was settled by a lot of Germans, Scandinavian stuff, you know, their day was like a 12-hour day. They got up early and they had to work the entire day. So when they ate a lot of fatty foods because they needed to kind of sustain themselves for like, you know, 5 hours till lunch. And lunch wasn't that big. It was small because you don't want a bloated stomach while you're trying to like move stuff. Right.
And you're probably carrying it with you rather than going back somewhere and sitting down. So you need something portable too, I'd guess.
And he was making the comment, you know, the diets have stayed the same, but the occupations have all changed. Now people are more likely to be behind a desk in front of a computer, driving, things that don't require as much caloric intake or, you know, make you burn as much. So maybe it's a shift. I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out when that period of time when breakfast cereals, literally cereals with cold milk, you know, suddenly became kind of the standard. Oh, that's the only breakfast you need, you know, other than maybe a couple of muffins, an apple, and a juice. Because it's always go ahead.
No, I was just going to say the breakfast cereals date back to the flakes, the corn flakes, right? They were created as a way to make more efficient breakfast in hospitals. Because instead of cooking up a porridge, you know, sort of a corn or an oatmeal type porridge, this guy took the corn porridge, threw it on a fryer, and found out he could make these little chips that would last. And so he could keep bags and bags of them around, and it saved them time. They wouldn't have to cook up a big batch of porridge. And if you've ever actually made oatmeal the old-fashioned way, not instant oatmeal, but made like, you know, the really like old-fashioned Irish steel-cut oatmeal, it takes forever for that stuff. So it was a huge advance to be like, oh, well, we can just make it, fry it, and keep it and have it on hand for a long time. You know, so, and that was just going back to porridge, right? So the porridge was a cheap way, because meat is expensive, a cheap way to provide some sustenance to break your fast in the morning. So, you know, cereals are just cheap and easy. I think that's where that comes from. It's not any connection to what we necessarily need in the morning. It's more of a practical matter.
So I'm wondering if they should just start including meat in cereals, like, you know, chopped up sausage, a special package. That'd be awesome.
Lucky Charms with marshmallows and meat bits.
Meatballs. That would be cool. Meatballs and cereal. I mean, you have your carbs. It's just not pasta. And then you have meat. That would be kind of cool. Yeah, I'd eat that.
Well, it's got to be able. It's got to be preserved, though, right? Because the thing about cereals is, you know, they're in a vacuum-packed bag, but they're meant to be kept forever, right? So it's got to be some kind of
jerky. Yeah, but they don't really keep forever, as anyone knows.
No, they don't. But you know, you can't just put fresh meat in there, obviously. So it's got to be like a jerky. I'm surprised somebody hasn't come out with jerky-os, as Carrot Cat put it in the chat room.
Jerky-os.
Beef jerky-os.
Actually, I'm more surprised that they haven't tried to repurpose a lot of the canned foods that people don't like Chef Boyardee and turn them into breakfast. Like, have a hot meal on the go, Chef Boyardee in a microwavable can.
Well, that was the thing with cream of wheat, right? That was like one of the first instant porridges where it was like, hey, have a hot meal on the go. So it's, you know, you just pour it into the boiling water and you're done. And that never really caught on. Like, cereal is still dominant. It's the thing that people eat in the United States anyway for breakfast. Not at a restaurant, but, you know, when you're at home, people just pour cereal.
All right.
I don't even really eat breakfast.
What else have you actually gotten to taste while you've been in New York, since it is considered a culinary beacon in the United States?
Well, let's see. We had we went to the Three of Cups in the East Village last night, had delicious Italian food. Mine was potato gnocchi, handmade pasta. You could tell they rolled it themselves. Some spinach tomato, and quite delicious. Today, we went to Dumbo, which is a neighborhood in Brooklyn, right on the foot of the Brooklyn Bridge. They have a flea market there, and they sell juice pops, like basically just popsicles, but they're made from fresh fruit. So instead of, you know, some kind of strange, sugary, weird berry flavor, like I had a blackberry cantaloupe pop that wasn't mixed together. It was like the top part was blackberry. And real blackberry with the seeds and everything in it. And then the bottom part was cantaloupe. Freaking delicious.
Nice. I wonder if that's kind of a cultural thing, or was it just provided by a generic stall? Was it like a Caribbean thing, a South American thing?
No. You know, it was a couple of white guys. A bunch of white guys. And it was an organic. That was the big selling point. It was like, oh, this is organic fruit, and we collected it ourselves, and we made it. It's very pure, and we haven't done any additives. So it wasn't an ethnic thing. It was an organic hippie cultural thing. Yeah.
So they weren't from upstate New York or like up in New England.
I don't know. They might have been. I couldn't tell.
Clam shatter, a popsicle.
This was the yuppie flea market. Like, you know, there was no riffraff at this flea market. It was all very select, but good popsicles nonetheless.
They basically check your tax bracket before they let you in.
You could walk through, but you couldn't have a stall, I guess, unless you were catering to the right tax bracket. I don't know.
That's
also had cupcakes. I started a little war on Twitter because I don't know from cupcakes. I really don't. I don't even like cupcakes, honestly. I don't like cake. I like pie. But we were told that Magnolia Bakery was this amazing place to get cupcakes. It was near where we were at the time yesterday afternoon. So Eileen, my wife, said, let's go over there. You have to stand in line. Line moved pretty swiftly, but you still had to stand in line. You get inside. You serve yourself. You grab a cupcake. You go up. You buy it. And you walk outside. Sat down, and I got a chocolate cupcake with chocolate frosting. Incredible. The cupcake itself was moist and chocolatey and very delicious, but the frosting was insane. I don't know that I can eat frosting on a cupcake from anywhere else. I said that on Twitter, and of course, immediately all the New Yorkers were like, "Ah, Magnolia's a sellout. You got to try Crumbs." And somebody's like, "Crumbs is a freaking chain. You got to try this other one over here." And there were like 15 cupcake places on my recommendation list suddenly out of nowhere. So I suffice to say, New York City is awash in fine cupcakes. You will not have a hard time finding a good cupcake in this town.
That's one thing I've actually noticed about cupcakes and cakes in general is I really don't like a lot of the frosting because it tastes like that stuff that comes out of a tube of toothpaste, like that really manufactured kind of confectionery crap they put on. The best kind I've ever had is the one that people make from either, you know, whipped cream or Cool Whip or some sort of, you know, whipped cream alternative. Meringue or something, but you know, if it tastes artificial, it just kind of ruins the whole experience. So I'm very curious.
Yeah, this didn't taste artificial at all.
I'd probably harass you to bring like a box back, but I'm not sure if they'll let you carry it on board.
I'm sure I could carry it on. It's just that would be one of my carry-on bags. So. I don't know. I wonder if you can ship them, and if they'd hold up in the shipping. I mean, it'd have to be pretty pretty well protected. But yeah, you can buy a box of cupcakes. I think most people were buying like a dozen at a time. They weren't satisfied with just one or two. We were the crazy people like just walking out with one, and people are kind of looking at us like, really? You're going to stand in line and that's all you're going to do is you're going to get one? What are you nuts?
Did you tell them you're from California and you don't really see the need to gorge yourself on cupcakes?
I said, I'm from Oakland.
Oh.
And then I just stared them down.
Well, you know, it's funny because you remember Chris Perrella? He used to host a call for help on Tech TV. He's still big on the internets. I forgot what his website is. I'll find it eventually. But he mentioned the first time that he came out here, because he's from Iowa, it's like, oh, you guys actually do have like stuff made of tofu that isn't just tofu. Like you have tofu burgers and you have, you know, tofurkey and you have all this weird food that I used to think was a joke. Like, you know, it's a gag in a sitcom written by scriptwriters to be funny. Right. You actually have that stuff. You have a Trader Sam's. You have a Trader Joe's. It's like, you know, yeah. it's interesting.
Yeah, it's real.
I was talking to a friend of mine, and they said that Trader Joe's just opened up in Manhattan like a year ago. Maybe longer than a year ago, but it's like the first Trader Joe's. She was originally from California. She's like, oh my God, I couldn't wait until they opened it up because I don't know if Trader Joe's has a following outside of the state of California, but you know, for a lot of people, especially when I was growing up in high school, it was a great place to get a lot of food that was cheap, but wasn't like cheaply made. It wasn't like just processed canned tin stuff that, you know, they marked down because it was, you know, really bad quality. It was good quality food at really great prices. You could buy cheap alcohol that wasn't crappy. You got great wine that wasn't crappy. You get a bunch of exotic teas with aloe vera in it that was really nice during the summer. They had a lot of the weird, one of those little frozen quiche things that they sell that you see at hors d'oeuvre parties or on hors d'oeuvre platters at parties everywhere now. Usually at Web 2.0 parties.
They're like just a mini quiche, right? Do they have another name? I'm unaware of it if they do.
But yeah, no, it's interesting. And, you know, how food is so, you know, food is something everyone, you know, is in touch with experiences, but it's so, you know, localized in many respects. You know, yeah, everyone has a loaf of bread, everyone gets a steak, but you know, what kind of steak is it? You know, what kind of omelet did you get? You know, all these kind of regional mixtures, it makes it very interesting.
Yeah, it's funny. I noticed some parallels in the brunch menus we were looking at when we were trying to decide where to eat. Shrimp and grits is the thing. It would seem to be on every place out here, and I know it's on a bunch of places in Oakland and probably in San Francisco. It's sort of like a hip new thing to serve for brunch on your weekend brunch is shrimp and grits. But getting back to Trader Joe's, my friend Chris that I was staying with was saying that when they opened up the Trader Joe's in Manhattan, it was news. Like, people trying to get jobs there was on the news. It was a big deal that they were getting Trader Joe's out here. And you're right, Trader Joe's is great. And I think the reason for that popularity is that it's not Whole Foods, where it's got like the amazing experience. Whole Foods is like the Apple store of grocery stores, right?
Yes, like, with you the go prices in there, to match.
Yeah, exactly. It's expensive, but it's like, we have everything you want. And it's an experience. And you're a member of Whole Foods. And, you know, you're part of the cult now. And they have those all over New York City. But Trader Joe's is more like, you know what? You're just here to get some groceries. We're going to give you some cheap stuff. We're going to make sure it's quality. We won't always have everything all the time. Stuff goes out of stock and we stop getting it because they don't want to compromise on their quality. They want to make sure that they have it at the right price and the right quality. And people appreciate that. Even if, you know, like, you cannot buy, I don't know if this is true anywhere else, in California, you cannot buy a can of green beans at a Trader Joe's. They have canned vegetables of different kinds, but for some reason, they have not found a green bean distributor that meets their quality.
Actually, that's one thing I've liked about certain retail or supermarket or food chains like Costco. I know Costco isn't just food, but one of the things they do, and they try to do at each different Costco location, is mix in as much of the local providers as possible. So if you go to a Costco, say here in San Francisco, you can get a bunch of, you know, products like these little brownies that Patrick loves. Can't get them anywhere else except in the Bay Area.
Oh, yeah, like mini bite brownies, right?
It's little mini bite brownies. But, you know, you go down to, like, from what I understand, out in Hawaii, they have, like, huge platters of sushi, like fresh sushi that's made
right there in the store.
And it's kind of cool because, you know, you're not only stocking the standard, you know, peanut butter, big thing of mayo, big thing of, you know, cornflakes, but you also get a lot of kind of neat, interesting local variety that kind of adds a flavor and doesn't make everything taste or look the same. It's actually, you know, the times that I've actually hit like supermarkets, like either in New York or out here, I'm always constantly amazed at the variety. And then I like, if I find myself somewhere like I was out in San Antonio, I was at the supermarket. They had a big Hispanic section, so a lot of Mexican foods, nothing for Asian, like maybe a couple of oyster fish sauces and a few things. I'm sure it's different in Houston, but it's, every place has its kind of own regional specialty when it comes to their food aisles because they cater to different demographics and population.
And of course, bagels out in New York, as everyone always says who's from New York, are not the same anywhere else in the world. And that's true. I have to agree. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the altitude,
according to some people, it's the water.
But yeah, the bagels in New York, there's nothing like it. And we had bagels out in Brooklyn, and they were close. And I'm sure New Yorkers will have a big debate over, you know, whether a bagel in Brooklyn can be as good as one in Manhattan. But for me, as an outsider, like, that was still like, okay, that's in the same class. And when you get outside of New York City, nothing is in the same class. And there are good bagels in San Francisco, but they're not the same. They're not that puffiness. They don't have that taste. And I can't even put my finger on what it is, but it was nice to have one of those.
We have pretty clean water. Oh.
Do you need to have like dirty water to give it that consistency that makes it a good bagel?
Something for the dough to kind of latch onto. Actually, one thing I've never found in New York is good Mexican.
Yeah, there's Mexican restaurants all over New York, but they're different, and I wouldn't say they're bad even. But I mean, my feelings about Mexican restaurants are totally colored by my time in Austin. I've probably gone on and on about this before, but my favorite Mexican restaurants of all time are in Austin, Texas. And that's why, and this just offends my friends from Austin when I say this, but that's why I'll eat at Chevy's when I'm in San Francisco, because I can't get anything as close to an Austin restaurant as Chevy's. And that's how sad it is. They're good Mexican restaurants in San Francisco, but they're different. They don't serve that kind of Mexican food. And the best thing they do in San Francisco is the burrito, the huge burrito, which is different. Best thing they do in Chicago is the big ass burrito. And I don't know what the specialty is in New York City for Mexican restaurants, but again, same thing where it's like, they're good, but they're not the same. Like when you go into a Mexican restaurant in Austin, first of all, you need chips and salsa free. That is your God-given right. You sit down, they give you chips and salsa. It's just part of the culture. And the salsa doesn't have cilantro in it, and it's not in cubes. It's blended and it's good.
Someone actually brought up pizza, which is something that New York style pizza is very well known for. Did you eat pizza?
Haven't eaten pizza yet, actually. We're trying to figure out. We went by Garibaldi's in Brooklyn, which is very famous. Huge line.
Garibaldi.
Yeah,
Yeah, no.
out the door and around the corner. But we talked about going to a couple different pizza places. Of course, there's the joke about original Ray's, because there was a Ray's on Prince Street, which was the first Ray's back in the 50s. But then I think in the 70s, there was one open on 6th Avenue. It was a different person named Ray. And then he tried to open them all over the place. And then in the 80s, suddenly there were like Rays on every corner, and everyone claimed to be the first one and the original one. And then nobody could remember which one was the first Rays. So there's the Rays that's famous, that's the chain that was originated on 6th Avenue. And then there's the Rays on Prince Street, which is the first one that was called Rays. And I'm like, really? There was no trademark lawsuit at any point? Everybody just started calling their pizza place Rays, and nobody could stop them. It was kind of weird.
Yeah, pizza out in San Francisco. I mean, we had Escape from New York pizza when we did our D&D gaming session, right? I did with Veronica and friends. That was good. I liked it, but it's not, it probably goes back to the whole bagel thing, that it's not the same as the pizza I had in New York. The Chicago style pizza that I had that Patrick loves, which is Pachi's out in Hayes Valley, it's good, but it's not like the Chicago style pizza I had in Chicago. So I'm just,
Yeah,
it could
Chicago.
be.
And again, there's different kinds of pizza there, right? Chicago style pizza is big and thick and piled up, and there is nothing like Chicago style pizza from Chicago. In fact, the best pizza in Oakland is Chicago style pizza because they do it pretty well. And New York pizza is different, and from what I've read, it has to do with the brick oven. You know, it's this brick oven style of pizza, but it's still flat. It's not the piled up, and it gives it that sort of deliciousness. That's just baked right in. I have no idea why.
Yeah, and it's one of those weird food items that people really don't think about, but it was kind of a snack food. It wasn't really meant to be an entire meal in itself in the way we consider it today. I mean, actually, a lot of cultural foods, like a lot of Chinese food, like fried rice. Fried rice was basically, like we said earlier, leftovers that you cooked up for a quick meal in the morning, but it wasn't really something that someone sat down and said, "Yeah, I want a bowl of fried rice." It was like, "Hey, I got some leftovers. I can sell it to you half off."
Yeah, a lot of
So
these
it's.
are portable foods, right? Like a tortilla. A lot of the tortilla-based Mexican foods are about like being able to wrap up what you had at home in a tortilla and take it with you. And pizza is sort of that, like it's just a quick thing that you could slice off, cook up, and take around, and you don't have to sit down and eat it.
It's a lot of food in the US is kind of designed to either be, you can either eat it on the go or it's portable enough that you can take it in the container and take it with you, right? I mean, Chinese takeout, you get those little square boxes. Pizza, you can either get a slice or a pie. Burritos, tacos, sandwiches. A lot of this food was meant for people just to eat at work or on the way to work.
Yeah,
So.
and that reminds me of the Hawaiian mix plate, where you get like, some kalua pork and some cabbage and a macaroni salad and some rice, and it's like, where did they come up with this? And apparently they came up with it when the workers from different cultures would come out into the field, and there'd be a Japanese guy with a bunch of rice, and there'd be a China or a Hawaiian guy with some kalua pork, and there'd be a Portuguese guy with macaroni salad, and they'd all kind of swap amongst each other, so they all got a little bit of everything everybody else had,
We
and they'd
did
have
that
a
in,
mixed plate of food.
I did that in, I did that in grade school. Like, the big thing when I was in grade
Totally, yeah.
school, when I was, I had a brown bag lunch, but after a while, all these kids started bringing thermoses so their parents could give them hot food. So, we did all the same thing, and all these kids would bring in food, and we'd take off our thermoses, and we just kind of divvy up between like five different people, like, oh, yeah, here's some rice, here's this, here's that. So it's totally makes sense. I mean, there's someone in the forums must know. I guess out in the Northeast, like New England states, there's a sandwich that has basically fried noodles in it as the actual filling between the bread. It's like a sandwich. It's like chow mein or a chow mein sandwich, which is kind of bizarre, but also makes sense. Actually, I wonder if
Yeah.
that's something.
I wonder how many dishes are influenced by practicalities of work and how many actually are created by a chef, whether and by a chef I could mean a five-star restaurant, or I could mean just somebody in a, you know, a one-man proprietorship. But I think most of our iconic foods are created just by the natures of practicality, either budget or portability, or what foods happen to be available. And you think about it, you know, pizzas, sandwiches, tacos, all these things really fit into that, like, well, we wanted to use the food we had around that was left over and was cheap, and we could take it with us. I mean, that really what's informed all of these types of food. And then the five-star restaurants start to come up with their take on macaroni and cheese and their take on a tuna salad sandwich and try to turn it into fine dining.
How come there are not more savory pies? I mean, other than chicken pot pie and maybe a turkey pot pie, there really is no like pot pie. I mean, there's a lot of things you could cram in a pie. You can cram in like a steak.
Are you kidding me? That's an American problem. That if you go over
No,
to New Zealand, Australia, yeah.
that's what I'm saying. Like in this country, like you would think that'd be such an obvious thing to do. Like you take care of your
Now we
grand.
just it's too weird for Americans. They're like, well, it's a pie is a fruit pie, right? I don't want to have savory stuff in my pie. And if there is savory stuff in my pie, well, why can't I just, you know, have a big thing of turkey? Why would I have it in the pie? Like, I don't know. There's some mismatch because savory pies are delicious. And I don't know what our problem is.
And
I mean,
one
we like
thing I
pizza
noticed,
pies, right?
yeah, and well, it's funny because another thing I noticed, like in Sweden, I was talking to Camilla, or Swedish former Swedish intern, now Swedish part-time contractor. They have fruit soups in Sweden, like it's a soup with fruit instead of like you know some sort of vegetable, savory vegetable meat or just meat, you know, broth. So it you know it's makes sense. They actually have something very similar in Asiatic cultures as well. So it's again, it's like one of those things that seems kind of obvious, but like apricot stew I had in junior high, and it was something like our teacher made up, or actually made up in class. He didn't make it off the top of his head. And it was something that's like, hey, you know, this actually tastes really good as a soup. Why don't people do more of it? Is it only desserts are supposed to be sweet and, you know, your dinner's supposed to be savory?
We'll have to save that for another time. Like, why are desserts sweet? I guess it kind of finishes off the palate so you don't feel hungry anymore because you get something sweet. I don't know. But thanks everybody for listening. Thanks for watching on the Twit Network. You can subscribe to the podcast, sobrilliant.com/EMW, and comment as well. Didn't get a lot of comments last week, probably because we haven't really been reading a lot of comments on the show. So if you comment on this one, we will make a better effort and read it on the next episode. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.